everybody. Welcome back to Brainstorm Brewery. This week is a very special episode because it's always a special episode around here, and I'm just trying to continue on the Marcel tradition. But we are back here. Episode 209, first week of Kaladesh Standard, and we have a guest on again this week. I'll go ahead and let them introduce themselves, though.
He's talking about you, DJ.
Get it? DJ was quiet there. He doesn't want to... Yeah. Well played. Well played. I see what you're trying for there.
Maybe if I just don't say anything, I'll be a permanent cast member. That doesn't work. You're not going to blackmail us into accepting you. We still haven't even had our fans vote about whether
you
should stay or not.
Hey, guys, welcome to Brainstorm Brewery. This is episode 209. It's not even a very special episode because apparently I'm not a permanent cast member.
You're not. I'm sorry.
Jason, you saw the text group. Jason and I had to ask each other and decide if we were going to let you guest tonight.
Yeah, that's true. That was literal... That was a literal thing.
I think 20 minutes ago you were asking about whether or not you wanted to put me to work, like doing some stuff with a Patreon and stuff like that.
I said just doing some bitch work because long-term guests should do some bitch work.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you guest every couple weeks? You know, you should at least give something back.
Yeah.
All right.
But for the Patreon supporters who are out there, we do have some plans to maybe improve it moving forward. So if you have any suggestions on something you'd like to see or something we can do to maybe make it a little better, let us know, because we, you know, are always looking to improve, and that's an aspect where we hope to be able to do so. So, but yeah, so we are here again. That was DJ and Jason. You heard. I'm Corbin, and this week we have a lot going on with Kaladesh Standard, namely the Star City Open last weekend. So as everyone knows, the Star City Open it starts the sort of the year, the season every time there's an event, and it teaches us sort of what Standard's going to look like. And what we saw this weekend was a lot of aggro decks. A lot of them. Chris
of
Van
course,
Meter.
The very beginning of a Standard season, when a new set comes out, aggro is the first thing that gets solved. And aggro doesn't do a very good job of defending against aggro, so like it's going to be an aggro mess. The control decks take a lot of time to dial in. Everybody knows this by now, so we're not surprised to see a lot of aggro decks.
Yeah, for sure. That said, we saw Chris Famiter take it down with white-red vehicles, which is definitely, I think, qualifies as a pretty interesting deck. Unlike last Standard, where everything was sort of dominated by the holdovers, you know, Dragons of Tarkir cards really made up the bulk of that Standard when we saw Shadows of Innistrad come out. And we had a bunch of Collected Company decks in mono-white aggro. And this weekend, though, there's a lot of vehicles. Jump in the car and take on down the road, or in this case, the copter, smuggler's copter, 32 copies in the top 8.
Why did you do that? Like, you're doing color commentary at a high school basketball game.
Because he used to do color commentary of a high school basketball
game. And boom
goes
the dynamite.
So what I would have doing there, that would have been described as play-by-play, not color.
See, I don't even know that because...
Because you don't.
Because I got a real college degree.
Oh, I see.
We're just gonna get so many angry emails from broadcasting majors now, spelled wrong and shit.
What? I have a.
Let's keep all the focus on the media majors, not on the random psychology major here.
Yeah, like the actually media majors do something, man. You learn to do stuff.
You learn to talk different about other people doing stuff. It's fine. I actually like sportscasters and stuff like that. I'm not even gonna pretend I don't. So it's fine, man. So if that's what you're majoring in, maybe don't kill yourself after all.
Wow,
it's okay. Really, Jason helpful. Knows the chemical combination of the salt that makes up the fact that he's not getting to use his degree.
I could use my degree tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Salt is real.
What? That's the opposite of salt. What are
the
you
salt is
doing?
Real, and Jason is salty,
salt,
and now he's trying to make himself feel better.
I'm
we
salty,
all see it,
you
man.
Don't know what salt means. You can't just say that I'm mad. That's not how this works. That makes
me mad.
We didn't
say you were
though,
mad.
So
we said you were salty.
It kind of does work, actually. Like, I get salty when people say I'm salty when I'm not salty, and then they're like, they become right. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, just like MTG Finance.
This all started because Jason's mad at me for acting like I'm on air while I'm on air. My bad.
No, come on, Jason. Don't you know that Corbin knows all of the hip new slang like Lucker Dog?
How am I getting made fun of for using the word Lucker Dog? It's just like common parlance on the internet.
I've never seen it. Am I that old?
Yeah. Yes, you are. You are really old.
I guess, Jesus.
You're on the gross side of 30. We know that.
The gross
it's like,
side?
It's like verbalizing
39
LOL.
Is the gross side of 30.
Saying Lucker Dog is like verbalizing LOL.
Except it's not, because it's a thing that people say, man. No one says LOL. People say Lucker Dog.
I would like to
neither
hear from...
Neither me or Jason have ever heard that before.
If I was more of a Lucker Dog, I wouldn't be stuck with you guys for the next hour.
I mean, you can quit, man.
All right, now that I've killed that conversation,
quit
let's talk
podcast.
About standard.
There's precedent for quitting this podcast, man.
Well, that got real.
You don't have to be here if you don't want, man.
That got real right there, man. Jeez. All right, then.
They're not going to listen to this.
Wow. I don't even know how to come back from that one. That was something right there, man.
Yeah. Yep. That's the old Brainstorm Brewery. People that have started listening recently, they're like, they're trying to be a little bit more professional. It used to be fun. And
It used to be fun.
I'm having a good time right now. This is a good episode. So, yeah, the top eight was shitty with Smuggler's Copters. There couldn't have been one more copy of Smuggler's Copter in the top eight. So, the card's real. Apparently, three toughness did not hold it back at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just especially good. And I thought it would be a lot of Madness cards that work with it, which is, you know, what I said during the set review. Even if we overall didn't like it, I said if it has a chance, it's going to be with the big influx of these Madness cards. And we did see some Fiery Tempers, but really no Red Black Vampires. It was just sort of. Just red black aggro was even a deck, but it wasn't even vampire themed. Just really aggressive cards and a bunch of vehicles. We saw a bunch of copter, obviously, a bunch of fleet whale cruisers, even Sky Sovereign, the battle cruiser itself by Chris Fameter in his white red vehicles deck.
I got a feeling we're going to see more Sky Sovereign as sort of the mid rangey stuff picks up. So I think if we're seeing it now, it could even have upside. Because I think once the mid-rangey and control decks get figured out, Sky Sovereign's going to figure much more heavily into those builds. And I'm not saying buy it at its current price, because, man, even a Mythic in Standard, it's going to be tough. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm getting mine in the mail soon, and I've got mine at 4, so I'll be happy to sell at 8.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Just a quick double up, not going to be greedy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree. I think this is going to be... And it kills... most of the relevant creatures. So we definitely saw a lot of vehicles and but also just aggressive creatures. What we're seeing, I think, more than anything is Kaladesh cards just absolutely dominating the new meta in a way that we probably haven't seen since, I would say, Khans of Tarkir, when those decks just dominated that Pro Tour. You know, Battle for Zendikar came out and it was a bunch of old decks with Gideon in them. Shadows of Innistrad came out and it was a bunch of Collected Company decks with with Duskwatch Recruiters. Now, Kaladesh comes out, and it's a bunch of Kaladesh cards with some of the old ones. So I think that's really interesting. I mean, just looking at the winning deck, even, because I think that's obviously the place to start, 4 Toolcraft Exemplar, 4 Veteran Motorist, which is actually just kind of a nutty card, 3 Dipala.
Oh, that Scry is just so dirty on that card. And it just seemed like a card that you could build the whole deck around just because of how good the Scry is and how it's ready to crew a vehicle. So that seemed like one of those things where, like, they're trying to make maybe a dwarf red-white vehicle deck look attractive by giving us that card. And I think what they accidentally did was give red-white aggro a very good tool in the form of a creature that's your preordain effect. So I'm really happy with how that turned out. And it's not financially relevant, so I'm glad I went on a tear about it.
No, it's fine. I mean, it is. It could be, right? I mean, it probably not, but we certainly have seen $1 and $2 uncommons, even from sets like Battle for Zendikar that had Expeditions. So it's possible.
BFZ had, like, one uncommon that was worth $1, though. And this
I mean, but Sasa Snare is still 50 cents.
Sure. Like, this set
And Transgress the Mind is $1 or $1.50. I mean, there's multiple uncommons worth holding on to from the set.
Yeah, Warping Whale, I think, has got like long term playability.
Watch.
It is Oath, but yeah, it's mostly long term there. But yeah,
I'm just talking about from recent sets, man.
Yeah. No, I agree. So yeah, I mean, I think that it's worth noting. I don't think it's wrong to talk about it. That said, there's another one I'm interested in. Well, two, actually. I mean, both Pia Nalar and Dipala. Pilot Exemplar. I mean, Dipala is just a sweet one. It buffs other dwarfs, which is sort of relevant. I mean, that, you if you curve veteran motorist into it, well, really, I mean, if you go Exemplar into veteran motorist into Dipala, that's a bunch of power. And I know we're talking about these as sort of a vehicle deck, and, you know, they are, but it's also just a dwarf deck, right? Exemplar into veteran motorist into Dipala attacks for a lot of damage on turn three, and then, of course, you add an artifact in their vehicle after that. It's just nutty.
I mean, they like having tribal stuff be good. It's a really, you know, sometimes you get fairies, and then sometimes you get Kithkin and Merfolk, where are right where they should be. So I kind of think they try to make the tribal stuff relevant, and even a dirtily seeming tribe like dwarves, which I don't think, ironically, I think dwarves are just going to be pretty trash in EDH, but probably pretty good in standard. So I'm not surprised that we have sort of a pushed tribal type deal.
I can't wait to see one of these decks start playing Start Your Engines just to go over the top and, like, crush the other dwarf deck. Just animate your copy of Sky Sovereign and attack them for, like, what is it? Like, 6 plus a 2, million. 8, 13? Just those two vehicles is attacking for 13.
Yeah, you really rob Corbin of his ability to be like, start your engines, let's get talking about, or whatever he was going to say.
There's nothing wrong with my my intros, man. It's great. So let's talk about the deck, though, financially. I mean, is there anything we like here? Is there anything we see having upside as, you know, other besides than, hey, pull your veteran motorist out of the bulk?
I'd like to go back to when we were tweeting about Copter, and we're all like, why is this $2? And be like, maybe I should buy them, instead of being like, oh, maybe I should talk about how I don't know how to evaluate cards because I thought that card was too cheap. And then I didn't buy any, so if you don't buy any, you actually didn't make the call correctly.
I think you should pick 3-bit inspectors out of bulk nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing that for a while just because they were, like, solid dimes, but now I think they're, like, quarter-ish cards just because it's a 4 of and a main deck of a very good deck.
Here to hear first, Douglas Johnson wants to bang 3-bit inspector.
That's what I heard after all. I heard it.
Solid dime. I don't know what Lucker Dog means, but I know what solid dime means.
Wow. Sure. About that. Let's talk about the rest of the deck, so.
Wow, Jason really threw the brakes on the Flintwheel Cruiser there.
Oh,
is that what you were going to say?
No, just make it
that
stop.
That is,
man,
what you were going to say, isn't it?
Make it stop. Go away. Nobody. We don't need this. Make it end.
This is your
taking
life now.
Taking it into the end step here with Corbin Hostler on Bridge to Improve.
See, that's like, sorry, he's making fun of me, but that's literally how he ends all of his articles. His DJ calls it the end step. I mean, it's his own joke. Like, that's just not good, man. Like,
somebody pays you money to write that. Somebody cuts you a check and be like, yeah, keep ending your article with that's the end step. Or whatever. I don't read your articles, so I don't know what they say at the end.
It's just a header tag, like end step.
See, I like how you use your own bad joke to try to make fun of me there. Good work.
I like that too, actually. That's economy of jokes, and I appreciate that.
Is that comedy degree coming in handy?
I went to got my comedy degree from the School of Hard Knocks, you guys.
Shut up. Everything is terrible.
Dude, a red-white dwarf tribal deck with a bunch of cars won an event, and we're excited about it. Everything is fucking terrible. Donald Trump
I like
president.
I like it, man. Cars I like
driving
it.
Driving around Kaladesh. No one gives a shit about any of Innistrad. And how could those sets even work together? It's like, well, I'm from a plane where it's 1532 Germany and we got pitchforks, and what the fuck is that? Oh, it's a smuggler's copter. Would you like to crew this? And then it crashes because they don't understand arithmetic because they're farmers. And how they get a pilot I think you can't have a creature from Innistrad block flying a fucking copter around. I don't get that. Flavor-wise. Is that who you want crewing your flying vehicle?
I see.
I'm just saying.
I just want to forget everything I just heard from Jason. can somebody do that for me?
We were talking about Billy Madison before the cast, so if you want to, there's your opportunity to say the whole nothing you said even resembles a response soliloquy, if you'd like.
You got Otherwise, it wrong. I'll let you poorly quoting it be enough to carry it there.
Well, I didn't care for that movie, so I'm not going to dignify it with a correct quote.
You're missing out. The movie's great. Like, confirmed great.
I actually think Happy Gilmore is the stronger of the two.
I mean, Happy Gilmore is good, of course. No one's going to dispute that.
No, we're too busy disputing the fact that you said you like Grown Ups.
I see. Grown Ups is a good movie.
Okay. See, that's Corbin Hostler, ladies and gentlemen. We've not got through this deck list yet. What else is
Grown Ups was a good movie. You're such a hater. Everything you do is a hater move.
I mean, that's fair.
Am I allowed to say, is hater? Is that too hip? Did I lose you there?
Don't play your hate on me. Go play your hate on someone else.
Wow. Okay. Anyways, I'm going to talk about Zach Voss in a second place Grixis Submerged deck, because this is actually a really interesting deck. Four Scrap Heap Scrounger, two Crypt Breakers, four Elder Deep Fiends, four Haunted Dead, four Neonates, four Price Amalgam, two Wretched Griffs, and then some crazy stuff. I mean, this is like a standard Dredge deck, almost. I mean, it has Perpetual Timepiece in the main deck.
This deck is sweet.
I like it a lot. I like how he's used the creatures that he wants in the graveyard, but instead of like just dredging them, he's like, why don't we use these for a merge and then get our value out of them out of the yard. So I really like getting basically double duty from your creatures. And I think Elder Deep Fiend is just so good. Just so good
Haunted,
at magic.
Haunted Dead is nasty with a merge.
Yeah, so yeah, he's figured out a way to reconcile these two blocks, essentially. Like, we got some good tools in Kaladesh from a set that really isn't all that focused on doing dredgy kind of stuff. So there's a lot of Innistrad cards in here, but he's managed to make some of the stuff we like Scrap Heap Scrounger, actually do some work. So I'm really impressed with this build a lot. Is there anything we think has upside? Could this make Prized Amalgam be a thing? Because I think its price is non-real right now, so I actually think even if it gets some play, I think there's a little cushion between it like coming in line with reality before it starts to actually move. So I'm actually not a big fan of Amalgam at its current price. What do you guys think?
I sold a bunch of them on TCG Player for like $4, and I was happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be played in Modern, I think, probably forever, right? I mean, Dredge is a real thing, and it's getting even better with Cathartic Reunion, so I don't see it going away. That said, I don't exactly see it having a lot of upside right now either.
So this could be a long-term card, and I think it's definitely a long-term card. It's a zombie. It does graveyardy stuff. I just think I think it could get cheaper than where it is now, and I think you are leaving money on the table if you buy it now, because I think you can get it later for cheaper. It's going to go up, but I think it'll go down first.
Yeah. I can get behind that. I can agree with that, especially if it starts to actually see standard play, continues to see standard play, you know. I think that's a real thing. But yeah, I mean, Cathartic Reunion, by the way, is just a silly, silly card.
Yeah, it's really strong. Like, they have to know that's going to cause problems for them later. Maybe a year or two down the line in Modern, but Cathartic Reunion just, it seems really pushed in terms of what those kind of effects should cost. But I mean, not mana-wise, but, you know what I mean, or you don't. it seems really good. It was sort of like, when the one from the first Innistrad with Flashback came out that we thought was nuts. I think this is similar to that. I don't know card names.
Faithless Looting, everyone.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm
nice
terrible.
Work.
Yeah, well, at least I can pronounce the ones I can remember.
Sure. I guess. So,
is there anything,
you got
we
that
like
going
out of
for
this
you.
Deck? Could
so out of this deck,
go up?
Well, Scrounger's part of it, but Scrounger's going to get opened a ton right now, you know? So I think it may be better to look at something like Crypt Breaker, which is basically a dollar right now. Also, you know, make sure to get your Insolent Neonates out of the bulk, but because those are already a pick. But yeah, I mean, I think something like
That's my
Crypt
breaking
Breaker
bulk pick. Called it.
That's fine.
Yeah, Haunted Dead could be as well.
That card's played in Modern Dredge too, though.
Yeah, as a one of, though.
I thought it was two, but that's fine.
Even still. So, I think there could be upside to Elder Deep Fiend. Because when this card is played, it's usually always played as a four of. And especially given how aggressive. There's a couple things. So look at how aggressive the format was this weekend. You know, we saw a ton of it. Secondly, vehicles are really difficult to interact with traditional removal, especially given how much of it is sorcery speed, you know, sort of at this present moment in Standard, right? So I think that Elder Deep Fiend / Kozilek's Return is going to be defining in terms of if you are playing a non-aggro deck, you have to be playing these cards because you have to have a way to trigger that Kozilek's Return out of your graveyard at instant speed to get the 5 damage in and kill a vehicle. So, you know, your opponent crews a vehicle, moves to attack, you get your Elder Deep Fiend in, and, you know, you're able to grab your cathartic or to grab your return and cast it out of your graveyard. I think that that's going to be a very, very important interaction. And I think it's possible that both Elder Deep Fiend and Return could have upside because of that. Of the two, even though Return is a mythic, it's already a much higher buy-in. So I think Elder Deep Fiend could be a pretty good pickup as a result of that.
I get behind that. It's not really being opened anymore. And like you said, when it's played as a four of.
Yeah, so anything else stand out to you guys from the weekend? We have some Delirium, more aggro, humans, a lot more vehicles.
I think
did
we
not
should
see
be...
the combo deck, though.
Yeah, and we didn't really see anything control-y. And there are some cards, I think, that are going to get played a lot more later in those control-y decks, and they're not really right now because those decks haven't been solved. So I think there's still some time to get ahead of the curve because really you can't buy reactively into Standard anymore. It used to be you would watch coverage and then, you know, Monday would roll around and you'd be like, yeah, it's noon on Monday. I better read some deck lists. Then you read some deck lists for the weekend. You order some stuff on Tuesday. It comes on Friday. Now your orders on Friday night, Saturday afternoon are getting canceled because the price has already spiked. You can't buy reactively like you used to. So I kind of think we need to be thinking ahead of what the control decks are going to do to stop some of these aggro decks. And I think the Kozilek's Return Elder Deep Fiend interaction you talked about was strong. But I also think some of the Planeswalkers could have some upside in the controller builds. And I think Sky Sovereign, even though it's got upside, I think it's got too high a buy-in. So is there anything else you guys think some of the mid-range and control decks are going to employ to stop the Dwarven vehicular beatdown?
I just want to know, I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was a like pure blue-white control list that got 26th place at the Open.
Mm-hmm.
It's four Torrential Gearhulk, three Dovin Bonds, couple Gideons, four Glimmer of Genius, three Immolating Glare, Revolutionary Rebuff, Skywhaler Shot, Fumigate, Void Shatter. So it's very, very like old-school control-y where you just lock them down and eventually kill them with a Jace Emblem and like a Dovin Bond Emblem and then beat them in the face with a Torrential Gearhulk. So,
do we think the life gain on Fumigate negates the extra mana? Because I would like to think it does.
Yes, I think so. At least in Standard.
So what's Fumigate? I think it's cheaper than it will be if it starts getting played as a three of.
I don't know though. Like Supreme Verdict was the best thing that it like the best wrath that was ever printed really in Standard, and that was only like $5.
Yeah, but it peaked at like 15, but that was only for a couple weeks. You're right. But still, I think we're going into that couple week period where Supreme Verdict actually, really, really got up there. Return to Ravnica was really weird. Like some of the mythics were sort of dirtily, and then some of the rares were like picking up all the slack. So I don't know if we can really compare much to what happened there. Cause I think the mythics in this set are mythics. We have five of those Gearhulks, and all of those feel pretty mythic, and I bet four of them have the chance to impact Standard. I think the Planeswalkers are really good in this block, and I don't know. There's EDH good, so I kind of expected Aetherworks Marvel to kind of be the new Pyromancer's Goggles just for this tournament. We expect to see something like that at the PT?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we saw those decks do decent. They certainly had some showings, even if, not a ton. But So I think we're going to see a lot of that going forward.
I mean, having Emrakul to play
and
with.
And that's a deck that you know, you have this core of, you know, we're making energy, we're playing Aetherworks, so we're getting Emrakul and Kozilek. And now they can figure out, now that they see the field, what else they need to be worried about and sort of, you know, fill in the rest of the slots there, which I think could be pretty important.
I'm just going through the list looking for something interesting. And, like, right above the blue-white control list was a Teemer Aetherworks list mm-hmm. that played, because I know we mentioned the blue-green one a little while ago in the Facebook chat where it was just very turbo and focused on finding the combo on turn four. But this Teemer one looks to have a little bit of resiliency in, like, Harness Lightning, Kozilek's Return, Cathartic Reunion to dig for the pieces, and then, like, getting to cast that Ulamog on turn four, but having Kozilek's Return in your graveyard to blow up the entire field when you do.
Yeah.
So that's something to look into.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I've got another one I like there talking about this, but I'll go ahead and save it for pick of the week, so give that one a little bit. So let's move into then Breaking Bulk. Who wants to go first? Breaking Bulk time.
Breaking the Bulk. Oh, I shouldn't sing. I think...
Sing away, buddy.
I think Matthew actually wrote a Breaking Bulk song that he's going to premiere, so... Let's just pretend I didn't sing anything and cue the song now.
Cued.
Breaking Bulk time. Breaking Bulk time. Break.
Oh, here's 15 Moon Mists.
All right, I'll go.
It's a pick. Breaking Bulk. The end.
It's no secret that I kind of look at kind of what's going on in EDH for my Breaking Bulk picks because... I kind of look at what's getting adopted a lot and, you know, the percentage of decks it's played in. Some of the stuff really sticks out. Now, I bought a collection this week at the store, and there was a playset of these. I think the guy bought a bunch of the precons, the Izzet versus Golgari precons, and it looked pretty picked over. The guy had pulled out, you know, all the rares, obviously, but he'd gone a little bit deeper, picked out the signets and stuff like that. But I don't think he checked the prices because I got a playset of Sadistic Hypnotist. This almost feels like cheating. Does anybody know what Sadistic Hypnotist is worth?
$3.
Three actual dollars.
I did not know that. I'll be honest. I didn't know that one.
And I've seen these in bulk a lot. This got a reprint, and everyone thought that would hammer the price. Sadistic Hypnotist is like the fifth most expensive card in the Izzet versus Golgari deck. It's ridiculous in Marin decks. It's ridiculous in Nath decks. Like, with Nath, it's a combo because you sacrifice an elf token, they discard two cards, then you get two elves with Nath, and then you sack those, and then you basically can make the whole table discard their whole hand. So it's a dumb combo piece. It's a 5-mana 2/2, and it's not even an elf, so you can't even, like, tutor for it easily. But for whatever reason, it's a $3 card I get in bulk constantly. I just thought that was worth pointing out that I keep getting those. But another card that was in that same collection was a bunch of Farhaven Elves. And I don't know why people pull Wood Elves, they pull Arbor Elf, but for whatever reason, I get Farhaven Elves a lot. And those are almost 50 cents, you know, retail. That's like a 25-cent buy list card, so... I mean, if you think Sadistic Hypnotist was cheating, and I'm just saying that because I happen to get a playset this week, remember to pull all your elves that do that stuff, you know? Pull your elves that get you land, you know, your, your Wood Elves and then your Civic Wayfinder, all kind of crap like that. So those are always picks. They'll go to, like, they'll get reprinted and they'll go to a low, but they'll go back up. This is, Farhaven Elf is 15 cents, 25 cents on a buy list. All day in a year it wasn't reprinted. So consider that a pick and a half.
Yeah, it's weird. Sadistic Hypnotist didn't even jump until, like, Oath of the Gatewatch and just jumped to a solid
Marin
stage.
Marin,
there,
right?
So.
Is that what we can...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Marin's the most popular, most built deck on EDH Rec, despite there being exciting new decks coming out in the meantime. We've had Rashmi come out. We've had Gitrog Monster come out. We've had Ishkana. Like, everyone's talking about all this stuff, but it just goes back to people want to build Marin and Alluro, and it's hard to fault them. Those are strong, you know? And Marin is sort of bucking that trend of, like, it's just a commander, you know, and that's not going to drive the price up. Even being in a pre-con, Marin's approaching $8, you know, retail herself. So sometimes EDH can't really move the needle on stuff if it's, like, a fringe deck. But if it's, like, the most built deck for months and months and, you know, anything in that that's, like, uncommon and sort of rare has a lot of upside. So it's going to move rares, but it can even move uncommons, like we saw with Sadistic Hypnotist. So there's scale in EDH. It can't move everything, but if something's played enough, it can absolutely move those prices. So just pay attention to that. Or don't, just let me tell you, I guess. I don't know. Someone else can talk now.
Yeah. All right. So, much like Jason enjoys his 99-card picks, I enjoy my 78-card unsleeved kitchen table picks.
Ooh, and love them.
And so, I got a collection in recently this weekend. Well, I got to pick it this weekend. I picked it up about a month ago, but anyway, Summer Bloom is a decent pick. Everybody knows about that. But also in 9th edition is Swarm of Rats. This is a 2-mana rat. Its power is equal to the number of rats you control, and it has 1 toughness. But this card retails for $1 easily everywhere, and you can still buy list them for like 55, 75 cents. This past weekend when I checked it, it had a buy list price of $1. There was a store that wanted to give me $1 for 10 of them. So Swarm of Rats is a rat. People like building rats, Relentless Rats, all the rats. It's on curve into Relentless Rats. Buy rats.
Rats. Yeah, absolutely. I knew that was a pick, and I'm still surprised at how much that's going for. Because it's a good rat, but like, I don't know. I'm surprised to hear that, but I'm glad, I guess. Just pull rats, I guess, right? Like,
it's interesting because like, casual players don't play Wraths. They just want to stack the board full of creatures and just, like, out-muscle each other with creatures. And rats scale with the number of rats you have in play. So rats just get really good in casual. Because everybody stacks out 10 creatures, except your Swarm of Rats are each 10 ones, and your Relentless Rats are 8/8s, and you just kill them.
And there are multiple decent legends that could, you know, be the general for a rat deck, too.
Yeah, there's Nezumi... whatever, the one that taps to sack a rat and make a bunch of rats. There's all sorts of different. Ink Eyes is another good one.
Not only did I not know this card existed, I certainly didn't know it had been printed 3 times, so that's something.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Anything before like 10th edition, it almost doesn't matter how many times it was printed, because there are probably more copies of a common in M10 than there were in like 7th, 8th, and 9th combined.
I've actually got a story about another rat. There's a store I like to buy list a lot, too. It's called Card Advantage down in Georgia, and it's run by Thomas Dodd. He's a good guy. And there's one card in his buy list that's a rat, but it's a lot lower buy list than a lot of the other cards, a lot of the other similar rats, anyway. It's called Throat Slitter. It's a rat from Betrayers of Kamigawa, and it's a Doomblade rat. What?
No, it's Kills a Doomblade.
Interesting. I was thinking of a different one.
It's a ninja. Yeah, it's the ninjutsu rat.
It's been in a couple pre-cons. Like, Throat Slitter's got
It was in one
printings.
Plane Chase 2012 deck. That's it.
It wasn't in, really?
Nope. It's just one Plane Chase 2012 deck.
It was the ninjutsu one with Bella the Nightclad.
Yeah. But I asked Thomas why his buy price was so low on this card, and he said, kids' parents who let them buy cards don't let them buy cards named Throat Slitter.
That's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, I submitted a card to Wizards, and they're like, I know that you love squirrels, but we're not going to let you submit a card called Nut Gobbler. So, same reason, parents are not going to let their kids buy Nut Gobbler, so whatever. It was a good squirrel card. So, it was basically a Deranged Hermit without Echo. So, those narrow minds over at Wizards of the Coast deprived you of a great card that would have been an M15. So, sorry, guys.
Yeah, there you go. All right, I'll jump in. I have one that maybe you guys can actually enlighten me on, because it is a pick, and it's a new pick, and I don't exactly know why. I'm talking about Springjack Shepherd. It's an uncommon out of Eventide, and I get, yes, it's from Eventide, however you pronounce it, but yes, that's why it's a, that's part of the reason why it's a pick, because that set was, you know, of all the modern sets that were underopened, that one might hold, you know, the title. It was a four set block with a core set or something that year. Maybe there wasn't a core set, but it was a one of in the draft format with Shadowmoor for about 2 months. That's it. That's literally all of this set that ever existed, was 2 months of being drafted alongside Shadowmoor as a one of. But Springjack Shepherd, it's a 4-mana 1/2 with Chroma. When it comes into play, put goats into play, 0/1 white goats into play for each white mana symbol equal to the mana cost of pretty much you control. So it's Devotion. This is what they, you know, turned Devotion into. What turned into Devotion. But it's $2.50. This doesn't make any sense.
There was a some
makes about 247 cents actually.
Yeah, there was some deck in Modern that was using, I heard whispers of it, just like one of those Travis Wu-esque builds that just comes out of nowhere, and I was like, won a 3-round tournament on Modo, we gotta buy all these Springjack Shepherds, and it just shot up. There's no demand for the card, but like, for whatever reason, for a couple weeks, people thought this was a card.
Is that really what it was? Because like,
About this before I even noticed that one up.
Okay, I think because I follow a lot of bad modern decks, and I had not seen this.
I think that's the catalyst for why the card went up. But I think that casual players in the future who continue to buy goat decks will continue to sustain this price.
But that was never a thing, right? The card was 40 cents.
The supply steadily decreased.
I don't think it's steadily a pick forever. Goat decks are a thing.
Talk to
it was
Thomas.
It was enough of a thing to make it a 40-cent card in the most underopened set of Magic history, I guess.
Yep. That's what real demand looks like. It looks like it's a 40-cent card because no one's building goat decks. Like, if it goes up in 10 years, you can't say, oh, that's goat casual. It goes up in 10 years because the card's old. So, I don't know, man. I really don't think that there's real organic demand propping this up, and I think it's price memory could keep it where it's at, but I don't think you want to buy in at $250.
No, I don't think you want to buy in $250 either, but I think this card will still be a pick at like a dollar for the next 3 or 4 years.
Right, that's the real question. Pick. I mean, that's like, what this is, yeah.
Don't offer on this, but if you get it in a collection, you'll be like, hot damn, I got a Springjack Shepherd. I don't know, man. Goofy stuff happens.
It's interesting. I'm glad you guys had the info, though, because I honestly did not know why that card had moved. I just knew that, hey, I need to add this onto the list of picks.
Yeah, you got to read really, really terrible sources. Like, you think you read bad sources? You don't read bad sources, man.
I guess not, man. I'm on the lookout for bad modern decks all the time. Like, that's what I do.
You gotta read the MTG Market Watch subreddit if you want to know why the shittiest cards spike.
Hang on. This is actually an article I'm going to write next week for TCG, or not for TCG Player, but like about TCG Player for Quiet Speculation. If you go on TCG Player and you look up Springjack Shepherd and you look at customers who bought this also purchased, some of the cards are Trading Post, Nyx Fleece Ram, Mirror Entity, Obelisk of Urd, Kithkin Harbinger, and Springjack Pastor. That's Goat Tribal.
Shut up, DJ.
That's Goat Tribal right there.
You disgust me.
Go kill yourself and then shut up.
Don't tell people that. That's not a nice thing to say. What's wrong with both of you? One of you's on about goats and one of you's on about offensive things.
That Goat Tribal exists? I agree.
And Goat Token is also on that list of cards also purchased.
Because it's the greatest token of all time.
All right, it's over. We're moving on. Let's talk about Magic Online changes. I'm sure this won't be contentious.
Oh, great.
It won't because I don't know anything about it, so I'm just going to agree with whatever you say, even though you're kind of dumb.
I see. That makes sense. So for people who don't know, Magic Online has undergone some changes. You cannot get the Masterpiece series on Magic Online in a regular booster pack. You'll never open these in a draft. No one in an online draft is ever going to have a Sol Ring cast on them in turn one. However, what they did do is they added what are called treasure chests to the payout of some events. So instead of getting, you know, packs and tickets or whatever the payout is, it equals X amount. You have those things plus some number of treasure chests. And the early consensus among the community is that the treasure chests, which will typically have like two uncommons or commons for standard, but could be replaced with something as rare as a Black Lotus or really anything in between. There's like a curated list of like 600 modern and eternal playable cards or something. So in the video they did to show it off, there was a remand and a Force of Will open.
Which everybody says that means the treasure chest was super rigged.
I don't think it was rigged.
I know. It seems like a 9/11 conspiracy theory to me, but...
Yeah, I don't think they... I don't think they're able to I don't think they I think they have better things going on.
Expertise, is that what you're saying?
You don't think I think they have better things going on than to rig a treasure chest for a video.
Corbin's got a Wizards of the Coast sniper aimed at the back of his neck.
Red on his chest. I think that the treasure chest will be good and the people complaining will stop over time. Oh God, I have a son, please. Don't take the shot.
In this case, I think that the concept of treasure chests is good. Imagine, so basically, you know, this is the Hearthstone pack, right? This is the arena prizes. You don't know what you're going to get, but it could be good. Could be a card, could be play points, could be dust. You know, the similarities between the two are pretty striking. So the concept is, hey, maybe they're going to do quests on Magic Online someday. Maybe you play in a limited event, you get a treasure chest. So, like, I think the concept of it could be good. It also allows them targeted reprints of, because they can play with those numbers as to what shows up. You know, if there's a certain card that costs too much on Magic Online, in the past they've tried to address these things by having flashback drafts, or they've even gone so far as to do Tempest Remastered, which was basically aimed at putting more Wastelands out there. Now they have these treasure chests, and, you know, they can, I'm sure, up the percentage on whatever card needs to be reprinted a lot in terms of price. So that gives them some additional levers to pull as far as managing the Magic Online economy. That said, I think the rollout of these has been pretty poor. They were not clear with what the expected value or the ratio of sweet cards in the thing is. And obviously they can't tell you the value, but it seems like the community wanted more information as to what to expect from treasure chests than they got.
That's okay. That's fair. I would almost swear you didn't work for Wizards of the Coast the way you said that. That's pretty much what people are bitching about. And some people, more than others, some people, I'm not going to name names, but they would rather play the Hex TCG than play Modo, and this is one of the reasons why. I heard a lot of bitching.
The thing is, and this is where you won't doubt that I work for Wizards of the Coast, contract for Wizards of the Coast, but they do have a history of listening to feedback after making unpopular changes and rolling them back. For instance, the Mox changes last year where they allowed Platinum players who to play in those events even if they didn't play Magic Online, they rolled those back. They had a thing where they weren't running Mox limited tournaments or something like that. They rolled those back when people didn't like it. So it's just this two steps backwards to try to take one step forward that just seems to be the problem for Mitko over and over again.
Mitko,
so,
yeah, now I know you work for Wizards.
I told you, man. I knew it was coming. I set you
up. Mitko's like the word fetch. Stop trying to make it happen.
I see. Okay. Now that I've been properly derailed from my train of thought, I think that the end result here could be something that's positive for players, but the messaging, again, it's just, this is always the problem with Wizards of the Coast. The messaging just rubs people the wrong way so often that it's a real problem, and I hate to see that it happened again because I think that they were excited about treasure chests and the possibilities with them. You know, instead it turned out to be something that is universally hated on first glance, which is not surprising. I mean, players are going to hate on everything, but in this case, the early math seems to suggest that they have a case. So I don't know. There was also changes to redemption in that the time for redemption has been greatly decreased.
That is very relevant.
Yeah.
But
that's
a big
deal.
I think the people that get sniped the most by that are the people that were just sitting on... People just buy all these copies of a crap mythic and jack it up, and they're like, I'm the only one with the crap mythic that you need for the redemption set. And that was just annoying to people. And people kind of had time to do those shenanigans, and now maybe they won't, but I don't know. If curbing that is worth how annoying this is going to be to everybody else,
I think they're making it
super inefficient to try to have redemption sets be a source of income. And I think the amount of work it takes, it's annoying that they're trying to curb that.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if the end goal of Wizards of the Coast is to do away with redemption entirely and make Magic Online separate from paper Magic, if it can be proven to support itself. Because it is very difficult. I imagine Redemption, it's basically a no. There's probably very little immediate benefit to them for running that program, and I don't know how much it costs or anything like that, obviously, but it doesn't necessarily do a lot for them, you know? So, I know why they did it in the first place. They needed people to have confidence in buying their cards for a second time on Magic Online, because you have to support your economy and have some consumer confidence that way. That said, I can also see now why they'd want to divorce it entirely. I mean, online trading card games are clearly a thing that can have an economy of their own, or at least have something that people put money into. So, I don't know. This is a step. We also saw them with player rewards back in the day, you know, 5 years ago, whatever it was. They stopped doing those because it was just a costly program that didn't provide many benefits.
Provided a hell of benefits.
To us, not to them as a company. That money can be better spent in other ways. At least that was their reasoning with that. We don't know what their reasoning here is with Redemption, but it is definitely a blow to people who look to make money that way, or people who see it as an attack on the Magic Online economy as a whole.
I just think we kind of needed the people that were doing that, because we were relying on Redemption to really interject copies of stuff into the market, and without that force, I kind of think that nothing's going to take up the slack, and we could see non-moto prices balloon as a result of this.
We could. It may work to offset, and this is important to remember, because we talk a lot about how the masterpieces are going to make standard cheaper, and they will. However, some amount of that, whatever that effect is going to be, might be offset by the changes in Redemption. It's not necessarily Kaladesh right now that's going to get hit by it. It's Kaladesh a year from now, when no one can redeem it anymore, and it's not being opened in paper, and some card that nobody was using before, some mythic, metallurgic summoning, something like that, you know, just pops up, right? It's going to make the mythics have an even higher ceiling, and it really, a year in, could affect things more so than it will, you know, in the 3 months that the set's being drafted.
And that, what that could do, could prop up box prices, because we're seeing, you know, $100 Snapcaster really monkey with the box price of Innistrad. So we could, even when the stuff's recently out of print, you know, and like in the last year or so, we could really see like a $200 box of Kaladesh while it's still in standard almost, just because of something like this. It's something that we'll have figured out after it happens. But trying to anticipate exactly what this is going to do is really tough.
Right, but you're right. The $100 Lilianas, and I think Snapcaster maybe for a minute hit 100, but it's basically stabilized around 50.
Yeah.
It's just something to keep an eye on and keep in mind, because I would not be surprised if Standard is expensive 2 years from now. People are going, "Oh, masterpieces were a failure." Well, there's this is just another factor, and no economy exists within its own bubble entirely. There's different factors playing into anything, and this is going to be one of them to keep an eye on. All right, we got that out of our system. I hope that at least gives an understanding to people. None of us are Magic Online experts in terms of exactly how this affects the economy and how it affects drafters and all of this, but I hope to see at least some transparency from Wizards, if not something to, you know, make players feel more comfortable with these changes.
Corbin's not a Magic Online expert in playing either, considering how he got crushed before the cast started.
Oh!
You're right, man. I did lose a match on Magic Online. I'm probably the only person that's ever happened to.
The only person that's happened to that frequently.
I see. That was good. You guys got me, man. Got me real good there.
We know. You don't need to tell us we got you.
All right. Let's get some pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
Did they just, I don't know. You guys know because you're listening in your cars and stuff, but I don't know if there was a pick of the week song there. I'm hoping.
That's what
was.
I was hoping. I like set it up perfectly and then we were all just quiet.
Yeah.
I was like, the pick of the week song's playing. It's great.
It'll be really easy to put that song in there.
I was just quiet because I'm not a guest and because guests normally go first.
Hey, why don't we vote? Okay. Is Douglas
DJ
Johnson, is he a guest? Who says no?
think I heard a viewer say say no.
He heard a viewer of our podcast.
Okay, now who says he is a guest? I do.
I do.
Oh, that's 2-0? Jeez, what a landslide. Go first, guest.
All right. My pick of the week is Thopter Foundry. This card spiked to around $13 after Sword of the Unique was unbanned, and then it did absolutely kaput in Modern. And I am a big fan of picking up cards after they get banned, after they get unbanned, once they hit a bottom, with the potential of some random artifact being released that makes this card with Sword of the Meek be good again in Modern. There's very low risk. I'm not buying in a bunch at retail. I'm just setting them aside when I find them in bulk, just because I don't feel like selling these at a dollar is reasonable when it's part of powerful Modern combo.
Make Sword of the Meek great again. Heard it here. No, I actually think that's a good pick.
Yeah, I like it better than Bloodbraid because I think it's got non-modern applications. I think people are going to get excited about Thopters in EDH, and I think the metal Thopter token I received from Gathering Magic that I auctioned off this week has something to do with that.
That is pretty cool.
I was like, that token's so cool, I want to build a Thopter deck, so that's what I wrote about on GM this week. And there are a lot of cards that that are really dumb with Thopters. I like, you can play the Thopter Foundry Sword of the Meek combo in the same deck as a Thopter Assembly Time Sieve combo. So, because that can get you, for 5 mana, that can get you all the Thopters you need for Time Sieve. So,
yep. Sounds like my Shroom deck.
I mean,
yeah,
one.
So it's just dumb, and Sidri and Shroom and stuff like that. So, having non-modern applications is just any format that gives it some exposure, gives it room to grow. So I actually like that better than all the dum-dums buying Bloodbraid and Stoneforge Mystic around the unbanned time. I think if you're sitting on something that could actually do something in another format and you're not just hoping for an unban, you got real upside there.
I'm also considering the fact that we'll 99% be getting a new Tezzeret next set too. And he'll probably be blue-black or black or just blue, so fits very nicely into searching for artifacts and putting artifacts into play.
It's going to be a white-green Tezzeret covered in moss making Sapperling tokens.
Sapperling Thopters.
Oh, it made Nut Gobbler spike.
All right, I'll jump in. We were talking earlier about vehicles and how to contain them in Standard. And you know, Fumigate, I think, is going to be part of the answer. But I think that I have a Mythic from Battle of Zendikar that could see some play in that. Quarantine Field.
Ooh.
It's a lot of mana, but it is great at, you know, 6 mana hitting 2 vehicles, and then, of course, it levels up pretty well from there. With 8 mana, you can get 3. It's a 3-for-1. You know, it's not going to be a lot. It's going to be a curve topper for control decks. And, you know, like I said, I don't think you'll see a ton of play with it, but at a dollar as a Mythic, it probably has some upside.
I'm a big fan of bulk mythics, but my biggest fear with this card is getting blown out by collateral damage from people who play Fragmatize, because it's an enchantment that costs like...
Yeah, that's true. The Converted Mana Cost of this card is 2. You know, that's an issue, right? It certainly has its weaknesses, but I think that, I mean, you're not out of much if you just pick these up right now. No, go buy them all in trade, you know, just get, or buy them all in cash, just pick some up in trade, and you'll be all right. You know, it's a high ceiling play, even if the floor is, you know, pretty mediocre. So
it's an EDH card too, because you're generating a ton of mana with Sarah Sanctum in enchantment decks, and this is, you're gonna get 4 or 5 perms with this if you're casting this off of Sarah Sanctum. So, you know, it's gonna take a while for EDH to make the price go up, but I mean, this is a Mythic rare, and once it's out of print for a while and people forget about it, I think that's just another way that this has upside.
Yeah, so it's one of those, if you buy in now and you don't get anywhere, you
just
can still
put them
do
in a box and forget
term.
About them. And then you'll see that this went up to $3. You'll be like, holy shit, I probably have a box of those. Then you'll look, and you got like 25 of them. You're like, all right, I'll go buy a collection. So, yeah, I like it for lots of reasons. I guess I'll go, because I'm the only person who hasn't gone, so like it's my
good
turn.
Good reason.
Yeah. When you see a U-shaped graph, it feels bad, right? The price was high, then it goes lower, and it was low for a while, but then it goes back up. So if you're at the tail end of it looking at a U-shaped graph, you're like, somebody made money buying at the bottom and selling at the top. That person was not me because I'm looking at it after it already happened. Don't you wish you could look at it when it's a backwards J-shaped graph and you know it's at its bottom? You're like, I would like to be all about buying these now. A card I think is at its bottom is Black Market. Black Market was a very expensive card because it was old and it's stupid. It's just stupid how much mana you get off of Black Market. And then they're like, let's put it in a pre-con. And everyone went, oh, no. And then it tanked because it was in a pre-con and everybody was opening it. And the other cards in the pre-con are worth a lot of money, so this isn't expected to take up a lot of slack because there's two commanders that are worth more than $4 in this deck. So it just kind of is sitting around like nothing right now. I think it's the perfect time to buy in. You know, it's like $4, I think. You can find it for like $4, and I think it's going to be a $10-$12 card in a year just because of how good it is. And even if it takes a couple years to get that high, you bought in for $4. This is a backwards J-shaped graph right now. You can definitely tell it's at the bottom, and it'll get back to where it was before, because with Marin being a popular deck and just graveyard based crap like that, Black Market's a card that there's no amount of supply barring another reprint that's going to satiate all the demand. I think you're going to need as many copies as there are just for all the decks out there. And once people stop popping the precons, when the Commander 2016 ones come out, I think this card's going to shoot right back up. So this is an opportunity to buy at the absolute floor, and I think you should take it. Black Market is literally a no-brainer.
I like it.
Good. Glad you guys like it.
No, that's one of those cards that I'm glad you keep track of, because they're hard for me to keep track of, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was just something I wrote about, and I noticed that Cryptghast had a nice U-shaped graph, and I was like, ah, man. I you know, because that was reprinted, what, 2 years ago? And I was like, man, it already, 2 years ago it was reprinted, and it's already back up. I wonder if there's a card that was reprinted a year ago that could be at the same spot Cryptghast was when it was at the bottom. And sure enough, I found Black Vice within, like, 30 seconds of looking.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
It seems real obvious.
All right, well, there you go. All right, guys, anything else before we head out this week?
Summer Bloom is still pickable.
Yes, it is. It's like $2, so I found a bunch of those myself.
It's a real card.
I found a dozen of those when I picked that 9th edition collection. People think it's garbage because it was banned, but you can still find these on buy list for like $1.50, and I have no idea.
It's the same reason. Yeah, same reason that Splinter Twin's still like $3 or $4.
But Splinter Twin actually has like EDH demand though.
Sure, some. I mean, I wouldn't say much more than Summer Bloom.
I guess. That makes sense.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that'll do it for us this week. Come back next week when hopefully we have a little more. We'll have some pre-Pro Tour talk for Kaladesh. So thanks for listening. This is Brainstorm Brewery. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Bunch of white guys takes two tries to clap on cue.